WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Little misfire at the beginning of the show, but welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Low Tide here on 90.7 The Capstone. Nicholas Persley joined, as always, by Joe Schatz, Adam Hambright. How are we doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, doing pretty good. It was a good weekend for Alabama, so good weekend for me.
Yeah, I'm same way, you know, having a good time. You know, we had the football victory over Tennessee, and, you know, cigars were lit, some a little prematurely, but, you know, we still came out with a win. And then if you are around the actual Tuscaloosa area, you know how late the people were partying. It was a good time. Today, had a, you know, a couple of sports aren't doing as well as we would hope, but, you know, overall, good weekend.
Yeah, pretty good weekend. I will say it was kind of interesting. You could smell the smoke in the press box with a couple minutes to go in the fourth, and I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah, I saw people around me. They were like 5 minutes still in the game, and they're already, you know, starting to line them up, and I'm just like, no, you got to wait. At least wait till a minute left, you know, when, you know, a minute, 14-point lead with a minute left is still not, you know, for sure a victory, but if you're going to light it early, like, at least, you know, wait till you're in the final countdown.
True. Yeah. So, of course, Alabama on the third Saturday in October gets a 34-20 win over Tennessee. I wrote Arkansas on my paper for some reason. I have no idea how that happened.
Maybe brain fog.
Maybe it's because you think Dan Enos is going to be coming back to Tuscaloosa as an analyst or something after he got fired today.
For sure. Anyway, big win. If you're going to talk about the game, you got to talk about the second half. I mean, wow.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about the first half.
Like, yeah.
We'll just forget it.
Wait, skip it. Yeah. You know? Who cares? But, I mean, what a second half. What was y'all's reaction when they come out in the second half, immediately break off like a 30-yard run, and then touchdown on the very next play?
Well, for me, I am never comfortable in any football game, even against Middle Tennessee State. Like, even when they have, like, 50-point lead, I'm just like, you know, it's not enough. So, like, you know, they score right out of the break. It's two plays. I can't remember the exact yards, but two plays, touchdown, and then you're down 20-14. And I'm sitting there, and I'm feeling a little better, but I'm still like, I don't know. I mean, we talked about it last week. I was saying the offense makes those big plays, but they couldn't sustain – like long drives, and you know, they still relied on the big play a little bit, but I think you started to see the offense kind of coming around to actually just being able to drive down the field. So, you know, it made me a little happier with my outlook towards the rest of the season.
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat with you, Adam. Like, after that first drive, the two plays, like, obviously I was stoked, you know, they scored, made it a one possession game again, but in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, you know, kind of did against Texas, too. Like, we even took the lead against Texas, but never really looked like we were going to actually win. We weren't playing all that great. So I was kind of waiting to see a sustained, you know, offense is moving and the defense is actually stopping Tennessee. And luckily, once it actually got to 24-20, I was a little more comfortable, because even then I was like, okay, Tennessee just seems completely out of it. And they, you know, I'm sure we might get into it, they had some questionable fourth down play calls, and it was kind of weird what they were doing some of the time in the second half. But yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal second half. And, I mean, Jalen Milroe played really well, and they actually got a running game consistently going. So it was great to see.
Yeah, one of the better second halves that I can remember seeing from really any team. I'm not just talking Alabama. Maybe I just haven't watched enough football, but phenomenal second half. They scored, what, 27 unanswered by Tennessee. And immediately after that two-play drive, then you have Chris Braswell managing to knock the ball out from Milton. And just like that, another touchdown. And Brian Denny came unglued. That's probably the loudest I've heard it all season. I don't know. What about you, Adam?
I feel like, you know, I wasn't there for Arkansas. We got to remember that. I feel like nothing that happened in Arkansas really made that place get to that loud. So we don't even have to worry about that one. With the games we had, you know, Texas was hard to beat. You know, that was loud. It was a night game. Obviously, late in the game, you know, when Alabama's losing, you're not really hearing the full crowd. You heard a bunch of Texas fans, so, you know, that was probably the loudest I've heard the opposing fan base in there. And then Ole Miss, you know, it's pretty loud there. But there was something different about this one. And, you know, maybe it was just, you know, they kept showing that little clip of Nick Saban mm-hmm. from the show earlier this week where he's telling the fans to, you know, come out, create the own momentum for the team. And I think especially like the students and like even the rest of the fans just kind of like, it's like, you know, you've been called upon by the legend to come out and like help this team. And, you know, I think they took it to heart. And we're down 20-7 at halftime. You come out the second half. If Alabama doesn't do anything, that place probably goes quiet. But you come out, you score like they did real quick. You know, all of a sudden it starts getting louder. Then the turnovers and starts getting louder. And by the time, you know, Alabama takes the lead, and then it's a 7-point lead, and then you have the fumble that gets picked up by Jihad Campbell and he runs it in. That singular moment is probably the loudest I've ever heard behind any stadium.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking too when I was at the game. Like it seemed like the crowd was pretty loud, but I mean, that moment, it was like, that was probably the most, you know, pandemonium that I'd ever heard at the stadium. I mean, people were jumping and moving and people threw shirts off. Like, it was wild.
And then you have that, and then immediately after, they play Dixieland Alive. And that
perfect timing. I don't know who's up there playing the music, but that had to be so satisfying to just immediately be able to hit that right after.
Well, see, I was sitting next to you know, Ashley Woods and Maxwell Donaldson, and we're talking about it, and they take the lead, and it's like, okay, there's too much time to play it now. They get the field goal to go up by 7, and it's like, maybe you play it now, and then they still don't play it, and then that play happens. It's like, okay, now you got the fans in the right, you know, mood right here. You play it, and that was deafening. And then, you know, they had to get a little extra loud for that Tennessee part at the end right there.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to the intern running the Alabama football Twitter account that did the classic, like,
all caps,
just a bunch of random letters on the keyboard. The Boomers didn't get that one, but that was
that was that was funny. Good. You click on the tweet and the reply is like, what's going on?
They're like, what is this? No, nobody got it. But it was funny. You got a bunch of people. It was good. So shout out. You know, I know we said we want to forget the first half, as I'm sure everybody wants to, but we got to talk about it. I mean, first off, the defense needs to be commended because there was a very real possibility that on 3 out of the first 4 drives, Tennessee was going to score touchdowns. The fact that on those, you know, on the second drive they punted, but on their 3rd and 4th drives, the fact that they got limited to field goals, unreal job by the defense.
Yeah, saves the game because then, you know, you have Alabama scores. They're down 13-0. They scored to make it 13-7. They get the ball back. They have that chance to, you know, take the lead right there or at least cut into a little bit more. They get the batted ball that's intercepted. Tennessee goes down, and they score with, I think it was 16 seconds left in the first half. You know, you hope that, you know, they wouldn't score right there, but by them limiting them to field goals earlier, you know, they get that touchdown right there. It's only 20-7, which, you know, 13 points. It's the biggest comeback Alabama has had since that 2018 national championship game against Georgia. So it's not insurmountable, but if it had been, you know, 27-7 or 30-something-7, then, like, I don't think the offense comes out able to play like that in the second half.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I mean, the defense just – and, you know, to an extent, like, I think it probably messed with Tennessee a little bit too, where they went into halftime and you know, they controlled the game in the first half, and they're looking at the scoreboard and it's like, okay, yeah, like, I mean, it's really only like 14 or 13 points. Like, it's not, like Adam said, it's not insurmountable. Like, I think that kind of eats at you a little bit, where, you know, kind of, we've complained about it a little bit, Alabama getting in the red zone and not finishing drives off with touchdowns. I'm sure Tennessee fans were thinking that a little bit in the back of their mind, like, okay, we left a lot of points on the board, and Alabama takes advantage of it, and you know, it's like a very you know, it's a bend don't break defense, and you know they didn't break on many occasions. You know, really the only one I can truly think of would be, I guess, the two, you know, kind of the deep ball that Milton threw on the first drive, and then that second half, or right before the second, or right before halftime, when Tennessee got the touchdown. But it was just it was like a master class in that philosophy by the defense in the first half. And to be honest, they've been doing it all year, but to do it against to do it in this type of game where you need it, and you know the offense is sputtering out of control in the first half, like that really shows that, you know, that the defense can get it done almost any time, anywhere.
And early in the game, you know, it was very reminiscent of the game last year at Tennessee. Like this year, Tennessee's offense hasn't really been able to pass the ball that well. They've been focusing on the run. They come out this game, they start throwing it right off the bat.
Dude, that first drive, yep. I don't know who the play caller is for
Josh Heupel,
Tennessee. Yeah, fantastic scripted first drive. A lot of, you know, this is something we complained last year about Bill O'Brien not doing, is, you know, running those short little screen plays to the outside, trying to get your receivers, use your athletes in different ways.
Well, like what they were able to do, I think it was Jalin Hyatt, you know, they constantly were able to get him guarded by a safety, which, you know, he was just able to beat all game long. And in the first half of this game, you had it again where he was getting – Squirrel. Yeah, it's a hilarious name, but they kept getting him matched up on a linebacker that he was just able to outrun. And, you know, I'm surprised that they were trying in the second half. I'm surprised that they weren't able to take advantage of that more than they did. But, you know, they it's credit to the defense this year. You know, they were able to make those adjustments after the first half. And Terrion Arnold, you know, it comes out after the game that the reason he didn't play in the second half, he did not clear concussion protocol. So, you know, he was kind of getting beat. Obviously, he got hurt. Hopefully, with the bye week, we'll have everybody healthy for that LSU game.
Yeah, I think to just the second half switch, it was kind of unbelievable. I saw in the first half, Tennessee had 100 rushing yards to Alabama's 16. And then essentially in the second half, it just flipped. And I think that was one of the big reasons that Alabama's defense was really able to kind of frustrate Joe Milton in a way. Like it was, to go from 100 rushing yards to Tennessee had 33 in the second half. Like, you know, Alabama essentially made it to where you don't have to worry about the running game at all in the second half. Joe Milton's going to have to win this game through the air, and it, you know, it wasn't really his best game through the air in that or it wasn't his best half, I should say, through the second half. And it was, I mean, yeah, it was, I think, just the ability to make Tennessee's offense very one-dimensional when they really can't afford to be this year. Like last year, if you had told a Tennessee fan, well, we're going to make you throw the football, they would have been like, yeah, sure, okay. Like, you know, Hendon Hooker's going to throw it 90 yards in the air or whatever. Milton cannot, clearly really can't do that, at least to the same effect. And, you know, I think for Alabama to, and we talked about kind of other teams looking at Jalen Milroe and saying force him to kind of throw the ball. Alabama kind of did it with Milton and it worked. In that second half.
Yeah, he ended up finished with 271 passing yards, Milton did. But I believe it was like 170 of those were just in the first half.
Yeah, so 175 at the end of the half.
Yeah, their offense was cooking. And, you know, I know we question a lot of Heupel's calls to go for it on fourth down. But at the end of the half, that decision to go for it on fourth down – with like a free field goal, you're already ahead. I think it would have put them up. What was the score at that time?
It was 13, so it would have been 16-7 if they kick the field goal and make it.
That decision, incredible. Like I would not make that call, but you know, and it changed the whole momentum of the game. You felt like Alabama was already, you were already so far out of it. You felt like, oh man, we're playing horrible. And then you felt really horrible going to the half, which just makes what happened in the second half for Tennessee on offense just mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah, and you said it, like, to go for it on fourth down in that situation, a really great call, and it clearly worked. But I did want to say they had that one fourth down at, like, the 50 where they handed it off in a shotgun run, and Alabama stopped it. I think it was probably the only play the Alabama defense would have really stopped in that situation. And I don't know why Tennessee, you have a Joe Milton who's 6'5 and like 250.
Was that early in the game? That was like in the second quarter when they went for it?
No, I think it was the second half.
I know the one that you're talking about in the first half where they went for it.
Yeah, it was like on their own 34. Yeah. Or
something. Oh, yeah, no, not – yeah, yeah, no. This was
– when they go for it so many times on fourth down.
Yeah, that is true. They weren't really punting a lot in those situations. But, you know, it just seemed like a really – I don't know. I think Tennessee I don't know if a coach got a play sheet or what, but they made a lot of weird decisions in key moments in that second half. That was, you know, this fourth down was one of them, and I don't know why you don't run Milton, who was a pretty effective runner early, but you know, they did it.
Why do more teams? I know Alabama did it against Arkansas. You know, some people call it the tush push. You know, Philadelphia people are now starting to call it the brotherly shove. I don't understand when you have a quarterback that big, why you're not even going to try that on one of your fourth and ones.
I mean, honestly, okay, this could be a whole separate conversation, but the NFL's already been looking at that play for safety reasons. I don't know if it survives the season. Or through to next season.
You can use it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. 100%. Yeah, especially when you have Milroe, who is built perfectly to run that play.
So I want to bring up a couple of things for the game. In this game this year, Tennessee third down efficiency was 8 of 18, and then fourth down efficiency, 0 of 3. So they went for it three times, weren't able to get them. But, you know, Alabama 5 of 13 on third down, so still not like the best. But they weren't in third downs as many times. You know, they were getting first downs early, which we had not seen most of the season. You know, we're averaging I think a 3rd and 8 on every, like, you know, every game is basically, you know, 3rd and long pretty much every time. And then the biggest, you know, difference, obviously not allowing a team to score 52 points like they did last year, but
that helps.
Penalties. 2022, Alabama, Tennessee. Alabama had 17 penalties for 130 yards. Obviously, you have the call late in the game on the game sealing interception where they throw the flag for pass interference. And then this year, you have one penalty for 5 yards. Tennessee had 8 for 55. I know some people are complaining about the disparity of penalties.
Some people, yep.
But I wonder who those people could be.
I don't know. You know, I just, you know, see people. They happen to have, you know, orange in their, you know, photos on X. So
yeah, a lot of like volunteer and then a first name. So, you know,
truly tough.
Well, I mean, you know, when the head coach Josh Heupel goes into his press conference, he didn't want to get fined, but they ask him the question about it, and he literally just stood there for like 13 seconds or whatever it was like, didn't say anything.
Just starts tapping his desk. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that's it.
I mean, how many times this year have Alabama shot themselves in the foot with penalties? So how nice was it to watch Tennessee do the same thing late in the game when the crowd starts getting loud and they get like, I think, 2 or 3 mm-hmm. false start penalties like in a row?
Yeah. It was great. I loved it. And then
felt like you were looking in a mirror.
You know,
exactly.
And, you know, hopefully this is a sign of how Alabama is going to play, you know, in the rest of their games this season, you know, knock on wood. But every time we were scoring those touchdowns, like we get the, you know, the early touchdown in the second half, you know, to Isaiah Bond, and then on the one for Jihad Campbell when he picks it up, I'm constantly just looking at the field like, where's the flag? And this time, you know, it wasn't there. We didn't have to see another touchdown called back.
Yeah.
Very true. Yeah. Also, I just want to say I brought this up last week on our show, the whole thing about how they couldn't score early in the game, how the offense continues to come out slow. Happened again. I
who was closest? See.
I gotta know when. Oh, that's right. We actually bet.
I know I said third quarter for our first touchdown, but I did say it was going to be to Jermaine Burton, so I got that part right at least.
What did you say again? I have it I didn't write names next to him.
I said second quarter with like
eight minutes.
Something like that. I made a very specific time.
That's pretty close.
I made a very specific time for mine.
Oh, four. You said
yes.
Did you have 4:35?
Yes.
In the first.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see when they when did they.
The I got the scoring right here. So with 7:05 left in the second quarter, Alabama scored on the pass to Jermaine Burton.
So I had a second quarter 8 minutes left. So that's pretty close. I got that and the continued struggles of.
I still got it to Burton though. I'll give myself a little credit. And if you know, offense didn't wake up until the second half.
True.
Yeah.
But no, it was you know, hopefully, you know, they have 2 weeks now to get people healthy, get people rested, come up with some sort of plan to actually get your offense and, you know, the rest of the team, like the whole team, you know, offense, defense, especially everybody playing for four quarters. We've seen them for second halves. We saw them for a first half against Arkansas. LSU is going to be a big game. Obviously, it is every year. The winner of that game is, you know, most likely going to win the West unless, you know, they just fall apart the last couple weeks of the season. And LSU's defense has played better the last couple weeks against Auburn, which, you know, we know the struggles of the Auburn offense, and then they played Army, but I believe they shut out Army.
Yeah, it was like 63 to nothing.
So their defense has been playing better, but when they played like Ole Miss, they gave up 55. So like this is your chance for the offense to really take over a game. So hopefully Alabama can just, you know, come out early. Hopefully, score early, not have to make us wait till the second, you know, quarter.
Not happening.
And then consistently throughout the game.
Well, actually, I take that back. LSU's defense is historically
terrible. It's pretty bad.
So
we'll see.
We'll see. It'll be the battle of mid Alabama in the first quarter versus LSU's defense.
But the matchup. So like obviously you have the LSU defense and Alabama offense, which has not been that great this year. But then you have LSU's offense against Alabama's defense, which could be two of the best in the SEC.
Yeah.
And that's going to be fun to watch.
Very true. Well, I'm glad that we have a bye week next week because we've got so much to talk about. When we come back from break here on 90.7, we're going to talk a little bit about the national picture, the AP poll, touch on a little bit, and we've got so much Alabama athletics stuff to get to, including the results of Alabama's secret scrimmage with TCU. We'll have that when we come back here on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, ladies and gentlemen, here to the Low Tide on 90.7 The Capstone. Nick, Adam, Joe, talking Alabama football more in the national picture this time. Alabama finally back inside the top 10 in the AP poll. They move up to ninth with a couple of big losses. Do we feel like Alabama being at 9 is probably the right place?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, obviously it's a little different because you had, you know, like UNC, North Carolina, who lost like in one of the most shocking upsets, like maybe ever, to Virginia, like a bad Virginia team. You know, I will say I was a little surprised that they put Alabama above Penn State, because I didn't know how much losing at Ohio State would really damper on Penn State. But you know, they moved up two spots. You know, obviously there weren't a whole lot of you know, losses ahead of them. Like, there weren't many teams that lost that are still ahead of them this week. So, I mean, you know, I don't think actually there's any. So,
I mean,
yeah,
if it's
not surprising.
Yeah, if you just look at those teams directly ahead, Oregon, one loss. That was to Washington. Real close game. They missed that field goal that would have tied it. Washington's ranked fifth. Texas, one loss, but they beat Alabama in Bryant-Denny. And their only loss is to Oklahoma, who's currently sitting at sixth. Florida State struggled really until that fourth quarter, and then they kind of pulled away. So, you know,
but that's been their thing all year. They've struggled to beat a lot of teams that they should beat. Now, Duke, good football program now. These past two seasons, they've really come alive. I don't know what got into them. Still another close contest against Florida State. I thought they were going to take it there for a while. I believe they went into the half up a touchdown, I think, or maybe a field goal. I don't know the exact details. I was kind of jumping back and forth between that and Ohio State. Speaking of Ohio State, Penn State. I don't really think Ohio State is that good, and I thought Penn State was a lot better than they were. Penn State did not look very good in that game.
No, they had Drew Aller, the quarterback, had one of like maybe one of the worst stat lines I've seen in like a big time game, like 18 for 42.
And Penn State still struggles, you know, with Ohio State. They haven't not beaten Ohio State since 2016 when they blocked the field goal and ran it back for the touchdown.
I think James Franklin's like 1 in 14 against top five teams.
Yeah. And then they still have that game against Michigan, which, you know, maybe, but, you know.
Probably not.
We'll see. Does Michigan have a coaching staff by that point? We'll have to wait and see.
Michigan going to play the postseason by that point?
Well, you know, this week, Michigan State even thought about canceling the game, like just not playing them. They decided to go ahead and do it, but it's like,
I think they said that. I don't think they were going to cancel it, but.
I mean, but.
Yeah, just the fact that they were thinking.
Yeah, but, like, just think. I mean, obviously, the postseason thing, but does anybody just go, oh, we're not going to play you, you've been stealing signs?
Is that the real power move if you're –
just cancel the game?
If you're
– Imagine, though, canceling that game because, like, Michigan – like, you know, it's not like it was close, you know, 49-0 for Michigan. But, like, you –
that would have been closer if they weren't stealing signs.
Exactly.
I saw a tweet that said this is going to be one of the greatest
vacated butt kickings
of all time.
Yeah. It would be kind of funny, though. Like, you pack out your stadium, big rivalry game, and then, like, 3 days before the game, Michigan State was like, we're not going to play you.
Yeah, like, okay, so they've still got Penn State. They've still got Ohio State on the schedule. What if Ohio State says
Maryland's no slouch this year either.
Go Terps.
So they still have Maryland right there. Maybe you can have some Tagovailoa magic.
Talia will bring. We'll help Alabama's playoff case by knocking off Ohio State.
He is a plant.
Nick Saban knew all those years ago.
See, you thought stealing signs was a big deal, you know?
Yeah, Nick Saban's planting play transfers around the league.
Around
the conference.
Like, since we're talking about these teams, like we'll see what happens with Michigan. Michigan and Ohio State still have to play each other. The big issue with that one is if they both, you know. Like, if Ohio State beats Michigan or Michigan beats Ohio State and they finish undefeated, that one-loss team still sitting there doesn't have to play in that Big Ten championship game. So that could be a team that takes up a playoff spot, you know, depending on how the rest of the season works out. And we were talking about Florida State having their struggles. They were down 20-17 at the half. They end up winning that game 38-20. They have the rest of their schedule. So they're at Wake Forest. And they're at Pittsburgh. Now, both those teams aren't necessarily that good. You don't expect that upset, but that's why it's called an upset. And both of them on the road, then that's their next two games, on the road, at Wake Forest, at Pittsburgh. They get Miami at home. Then they have, you know, the November cupcake that everybody likes to have of North Alabama. You know, Alabama will have Chattanooga, you know, right before the Iron Bowl. They get North Alabama and then at Florida. So there are some possibilities of a slip-up right there.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the teams ahead of Alabama didn't. I mean, Washington looked awful.
Yeah, they won 15-7.
I needed 12 fourth quarter points. The only touchdown they scored was on a pick six, so their offense was not moving the ball. You know, Oklahoma struggled against UCF in the opposite way. Like, they struggled to stop UCF. So, you know, I mean, it's still – even Texas struggled against Houston. I mean, it's – It seems like anyone's ball game.
But like a big thing about those other ones, so like I was talking about how the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State are only going to have to play once.
Mm-hmm.
These other conferences, like Washington, might have to play Oregon again. I mean, depending on how the season works out. Utah's looking good. They're coming back up there. USC, probably not going to get in that conversation unless, you know, something crazy happens. Texas might have to play Oklahoma again. And Oklahoma could lose to Texas. Texas could have a second loss. That would, you know, might look worse on Alabama for them having two losses, but also better because you could jump ahead of them. Then you have the ACC. You could have, you know, teams, you know, that are or like North Carolina has one loss now. Florida State's undefeated. That could, you know, work out itself.
And Air Force 7-0 could very well run the table.
Yeah, we'll see about Air Force. James Madison, also undefeated. I think they're coming in at 25th on the poll. They cannot go to – them and Jacksonville State just became bowl eligible.
Yeah.
Neither one of them are able for 3 years because they just – James Madison, their first year in the FBS was last year. Jacksonville State was this year. Jacksonville State just won their sixth game. James Madison, undefeated, just got into the top 25. Neither one – unless they get a waiver, which James Madison's waiver appeal was already denied by the NCAA – they could have so many teams with seven losses that they do get in, like just because. But what a bunch of people are saying, and this is something Alabama actually did in the early 2000s, like 2002, 2003, I believe one of those years, might have been both, but they were ineligible to go to a bowl game, so they scheduled a game in Hawaii against Hawaii. And that was their extra game. Now, people are saying that James Madison and Jacksonville State, if they can't go to a bowl game, they just schedule that game that last week of the regular season, so it's not a bowl game, but they still get to play each other.
The boycott bowl?
That would be amazing. Yeah.
Well, it can't
that
be a bowl. Be
yeah.
Well,
be
a boycott well, they're game. Boycotting the bowl, so yeah. They can call it the boycott.
It'll
bowl.
Be like yeah. It'll be like when we did the live, you know. Not really broadcast because we couldn't really say play-by-play of what was happening when we did our Super Bowl, where we weren't allowed to call it the Super Bowl, you know?
Oh, yeah, the big game on Sunday, you mean, in February?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
The only game today?
Yeah, the big football game.
The two teams fighting for the championship?
Yeah, yeah.
Too
but,
good.
But no, they should schedule that, especially because, I mean...
And then the winner would be the real national champion.
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, God.
Well, if James Madison ends up going undefeated, and, you know, I looked at their schedule...
UCF all over again, I mean, claim the national championship.
I looked at their schedule. They should be able to win out. They do not have a tough schedule. They have UConn. They have Appalachian State. They have Coastal Carolina, which are decent teams, but, you know, it's not like they have a late-season matchup with Ohio State that they'd have to worry about.
Yeah, no, that's true.
But that would be tough.
But, yeah, they should play each other and whatever they call it. And then, like, you know, that – I mean, they did it the COVID year, if you remember, against, like, BYU and I think Coastal Carolina scheduled a game, like, 4 days in advance. So it's like you can do it. It seems pretty clear you can just do that. So – why not?
Hey, guys, we're coming down. You just want to play?
Yeah, and it's like, BYU, Coastal Carolina, other end of the country.
Yeah.
Jacksonville State, James Madison is James Madison, Virginia,
yeah.
And Alabama. Like, you can, one of them can go down there pretty easily, or you can find, like, a meeting point. So
I would say just go to Hawaii just because, but that's just me. Just
all right, anyway, before this goes completely off the rails, I would say that the two, like, biggest roadblocks – or there's really, like, three major roadblocks for me in mm-hmm. Alabama's path of getting to the playoff. It's going to be Michigan and Ohio State, whoever comes out of the Big Ten, and the fact that one of them could have one loss.
Or you might get both
somehow
of them.
Or both of them could have one loss. Honestly, okay, hot take. With all the things that have been coming out about Michigan, a one-loss Michigan might get left out by the committee.
Yeah, especially if they don't even – well, I don't think they're going to – if they get to the Big Ten Championship, they're probably not going to lose to Iowa or whatever. But
I don't know.
But if they don't get to that Big Ten Championship game – because we've seen it before. Like, teams that haven't made the conference championship game and it's essentially a bye week for them have actually, in a couple of cases, gotten hurt because of it because – I don't know if it's like the committee watching or something, but it's like a you know, you see some of these teams again play, and Michigan might not be playing that week. So if you're like an 11-1 Michigan, and then let's say, you know, heck, for this argument, Alabama wins the SEC championship against Georgia. Like, you're watching one team, yeah, knock on wood, like, break the wooden table. That's how hard you got to knock. Like, you watched Alabama beat Georgia, who, you know, has been number one all year. And then Michigan, no one's talked about that Saturday. You know, I'm just saying, but it's happened. It's been tricky.
I will say, you know, if Alabama were to go to the SEC championship and beat Georgia, the immediate response is not going to be Alabama knocked off the number one team. It's going to be, well, Georgia wasn't really that good.
That's true, too.
They didn't play anybody all
year.
That
could be very true.
Yeah, but then we're going to sit here and act like they would leave Georgia. So does a one-loss Georgia that didn't win the SEC championship get left out?
I think this year they do.
Yeah.
Also depends on, you know, how everything else works out.
How bad do they have to lose to Alabama to get left out?
I think if they lost, it's the last
time. If they lose on a field goal, are you leaving them out?
That's the problem, though, is that you're going to – because it's going to come down to that Georgia versus – and I mean, you're probably going to say the Alabama team that just beat them. Perhaps an undefeated Ohio State or Michigan.
Got a Florida State.
Florida State. Washington.
It depends on how everything
Oklahoma.
Works out.
Oklahoma.
Washington, Oregon can get seriously interesting.
Yeah.
If Oregon plays Washington again and they win by a field goal, you – like – I'm talking super competitive games, right? Like, I think if Oregon, like, was to blow out Washington, not a question. Well, because it's that, like, later in the season game.
Another thing that they will have to look at, so we're talking.
I meant for Washington, if Oregon blew out Washington because of that, like, the more recent game matter.
Now, with Alabama, Georgia specifically, do we know if Brock Bowers is going to come back?
I think they said he –
because he had the surgery.
You know, it's an interesting surgery because I think Tua came back in like a month from that
exact same one.
Thing.
Yeah, he got it right after the SEC championship game that he got hurt in, and he was back for that playoff game against Oklahoma. Now, if it's a close game, you might put Georgia back in there, but then they will have to have the conversation. If Brock Bowers is not playing, do we put them in without their best player? That's going to be a conversation. But if it's like the 2021 year, now Alabama's offense hasn't looked that good, Alabama won by 20 plus. If that were to happen this year, I think they just leave Georgia out.
Let me throw this out on the table. Say, I don't think this is going to happen, but say Georgia loses to Missouri and Alabama plays Missouri for the SEC.
It is very possible.
Like, and that could actually happen. Like, that sounds crazy.
Does a one-loss Missouri get
– That's a – no. But what I'm saying is, say Alabama plays Missouri in the SEC championship game. Say they beat them. Does that even have as much value to the committee? Because you'd have a one-loss SEC champ, but Alabama didn't play Georgia. They probably played a Missouri team that is ranked behind them at the time
probably
of that
still
game.
Still ranked behind Georgia.
Okay, yeah. Definitively – I think, as much as I love this argument, you're not leaving the SEC champion out of a playoff.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, especially, like one loss SEC champ gets in.
Maybe if it's Missouri.
But what I'm saying is that, like.
If you have three undefeateds, but then it comes down between a one loss Alabama champion or a one loss Texas champion.
Yeah, it's hard.
But
that's
okay,
very hard.
But we've seen in the past that the committee, when it comes to teams that played each other more than once, they've shown a tendency to not really care as much about a really early loss.
Yeah,
as,
true.
So that, you know, that's the good thing is that you played Texas, but it was what, week two?
Yeah, it's really going to be how the committee thinks
and
they're playing at the
there's
time.
Not a person on the planet who would argue that Milroe, Alabama as a whole look anywhere near that team that's played against Texas.
Yeah. And I, you know, it'll be very interesting. It'll, if it comes down to like recent performance, then it's really going to be who looked better in that championship game that they just played.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. Now, I've just been thinking about when you were talking about maybe Missouri gets in, which I hadn't really been thinking about because nobody really thinks about Missouri, but they are still, they have a one loss, I believe.
I think 7-1.
Yeah. And if they,
7-1.
So if they were to beat Georgia and then go to the SEC championship game, and then obviously we would expect Alabama to win that game.
It's at Georgia.
But, well, I mean,
they could.
Like,
it could happen. I mean,
we'll see.
They're not bad.
But the thing is, if Georgia doesn't play in the SEC championship, that might actually work out better for him.
It could. I mean, you could kind of see, like, teams knock each other out, mm-hmm. and Georgia slides
It would be like, you know, the 2017 year. Alabama did not play. Yeah. And they lost right before, and they were still able to get in because they had been number one, like, all year.
See,
but
Auburn didn't know when to lose. We're smarter.
Yeah.
But well, yeah.
Somebody we're not talking about also, like, Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
Everybody forgot about Utah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're still going to play Oregon.
That would be.
They're going to play Washington.
See, that if Utah just goes and runs the table the rest of the year, basically the Pac-12 just eliminates themselves from the playoff conversation.
But also, interesting note: even if let's say Utah beats Oregon, they beat Washington. Guess who they get in the last week?
I don't have the schedule.
Dion.
Mm.
Prime time.
And then Colorado
Imagine
comes
that.
In.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Dion.
The media just, they jump them. The media just throws Colorado into the playoff. They get a bye.
Exactly.
Straight to the national championship.
Three loss. Yeah, yeah.
All right, whatever. We've gone completely off the rails. When we come back here on 90.7 and the Low Tide, we're going to talk about that TCU-Alabama secret scrimmage. Spooky. Halloween.
Super secret.
I know, right? Yeah, totally not like there was a box score posted on Twitter about 5 minutes after it happened. Anyway, we'll be back here on 90.7.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, ladies and gentlemen, here to the Low Tide on 90.7. We're going overtime today because we've just got so much to talk about in Alabama athletics as a whole. Just a tongue twister. Truly,
this is why it's good to have the boss.
It's one of those days. We got a bye week coming up, so this is, you know.
We're throwing it all out there this week.
You know, we're truly, I need the rest just as much as I'm sure the rest of Alabama football does. Anyway, like we discussed, the super secret scrimmage that was not a secret at all, everyone knew about, and I saw a box score on Twitter 5 minutes
after. Alabama had a basketball game?
Yeah, they did. They did have a basketball game. There's something other than football happening.
Wow.
Which you might not have gotten from the first.
It was secret.
40 minutes of the show. But
yeah, well, that's true.
It was secret, but we're talking it now. So TCU beat Alabama again, like last year, but it was not a massive blowout. I don't think there's going to be a players-only meeting after this game. No. TCU beats Alabama 85-81. Alabama freshman Sam Walter, 29 points.
I think he was 7 of 12 from 3.
Huh. Like, come on. But, yeah. Grant Nelson, 13 points, 9 boards. Aaron Estrada puts up 19. A lot of people not playing.
Yeah, Mark Sears didn't play. Yeah. And that's, you know, he was a big part of that team last year. So, you know, hopefully it's just, you know, they're wanting to save everything for the regular season, and it's not like a injury that could keep them out.
Yeah, you gotta hope that there's nothing going on there. But this Alabama basketball team is so young, and there's so many new faces. But I think they're gonna be very fun to watch. Yeah. I think so. And yeah, they definitely got, first off, okay, media poll comes out at SEC basketball mm-hmm. tip off. They're projected to finish 5th by the media. Now, they were also projected to finish 5th last year. Yep. We saw how that went. Good call, guys.
And the 2021 year. Yeah. So was it 2021? Anyway, it was both years that Alabama won the SEC regular season and the SEC tournament, they were picked to finish 5th.
Yeah. So also, preseason poll for basketball came out. AP poll, Alabama number 24. You know, down a lot from last year, but still a good spot for a very young team that really only has Sears. I mean, Rylan Griffin, if you can consider him a veteran.
Yeah, when your vets are, I mean, Sears, you know, he transferred from Ohio, so you know, he's got college basketball experience, only 1 year at Alabama. When most of your veterans on the team are just people in their second year in the program, you know, it's tough. I mean, you also lost, you know, Brandon Miller, who was number 2 pick in the draft. you had, you know, other players that left. Charles Bediako leaving. Clowney, you know, he goes to the Nets and stuff. So it's, you have all those big parts leaving, and then the entire assistant coaching staff. So like all of the main assistant coaches got head coaching jobs. So I think that's a big reason for them being that low. It's just because you have the unknown of, is the team going to be as successful without those assistant coaches?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Alabama. Okay, but sorry, go for Alabama. Coaching you, like, truly. I mean, this is like the hot spot. Any sport, come here, be an assistant, get a free head coaching job.
I was going to say, Nate Oates is turning his coaching staff into what like Nick Saban has, where he loses one guy a year that becomes like a head coach somewhere else. But yeah, no, I was just going to say that, you know, it was pretty interesting just how many new guys, and like, you know, obviously they're new and there isn't a whole lot of you know, guys that have played, but when transferring from different schools, like Grant Nelson coming from North Dakota State and Estrada, who came from Hofstra, I believe, like, you're going into new systems too. And I would imagine that, you know, some of these guys, like Mark Sears, probably didn't have to play this scrimmage because he actually knew the offense pretty well. And some of these guys don't. And, you know, it might take them a while to get going, which is why, like, you know, I think that 24 ranking is actually pretty good. I didn't actually think they would have gotten ranked because Alabama going into this season lost a lot of hype. Like, they didn't have the one. Like, last year it was, okay, Brandon Miller's here. Like, he's one of the best, probably, I don't know, statistic, but, like, one of, if not the best recruit Alabama has ever gotten in basketball. So the hype's there, and, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why Alabama doesn't have one of these, like, very early – well, I don't know if that's a reason, but it's one of the good things about why Alabama doesn't have one of these really early, like, Gonzaga or Purdue game. That, you know, they have a couple weeks or a couple games before they really get to a tough, you know, game that is going to really test them, because it's going to take them a while to learn.
But also, like, these other games on the schedule, that obviously you have the big games where it's like Purdue and you're playing in Canada. They got the game in Arizona. Neutral site, but, you know, still right down the road. And these other games, it's not all of them, but a bunch of these other schools that they'll be playing are predicted to win their conference. So it's not like they're just, you know, these are teams that are probably going to be in the mix for getting into the NCAA tournament. So even these schools that you may, like, if you're not, like, in the know, you might not have heard about them, but they're still going to be, you know, good teams. So,
like, Morehead State is who they opened their season against, who I believe was in the tournament. I don't know if it was last year, but they've been in the tournament a fair amount for,
I think,
know,
they were in the tournament last year. I'll check.
I want to say they were, but, you know, like, they're in the tournament. South Alabama is a pretty good team because they get a lot of, like, SEC transfers that don't play a whole lot to go to that school. And they give Alabama a tough run, like, for the past, like, 2 years. Like, it's never been a pretty game. Yeah, Indiana State's good. I mean, obviously, Larry Bird isn't quite there anymore, but, you know, great team. So,
I think it's been a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. He left a couple years ago, I heard. So
and here's...
Also, okay, just as an aside, I know we don't want to talk football anymore, but imagine if we got the kind of, like, football scheduling, like, just for everybody. So say, like, we had, like, the football, like, Premier League. We got, like, Alabama, like, scheduling all these great opponents throughout the year. Imagine if we got that for football.
Yeah. I have a feeling – I do wonder, like, with the 12-team playoff, again, not to harp on football too much, if that's going to grow a little more, because you can kind of afford to take a loss. And if you win it, that's such a big resume booster to get up in the polls.
Yeah, I think – I don't know. I think the 12-team's going to be kind of the – because, like, when you're adding now teams, if they play that first week, it's going to be three more games if they go all the way to the championship. I think at some point, then it is going to raise the question of safety.
We'll debate that next week.
But, yeah. Anyway, back to basketball. With the other teams, not like the ones that I was talking about to where they're predicted to finish, but this is the – top 25 on the schedule or received votes. I have the list here. So Alabama plays Florida twice, who receive votes being the top 25. They have Missouri receiving votes, Mississippi State twice, who receive votes, obviously Auburn twice, who received votes. Then they have number 16, Kentucky, number 15, Texas A&M, number 14, Arkansas, number 12, Arizona, number 9, Tennessee twice, and then big Alabama rivalry with number 8, Creighton, and then number 3, Purdue. That one's in Canada. Wish we could have had Charles Bediaco from that one because, you know, it's from the same area. So, but yeah. Very tough schedule. You have that. You have the other schools that aren't ranked, but they're going to be great in their conference. It's a tough schedule. But this is what Nate Oates has done since he got here. He schedules these tough games. So then once they get later in the season, they're used to that level of competition.
Yeah. And, I mean, just to look at it real quick, you know, Ryland Griffin had 2 points. Latrell Wrightsell had 0 points. So you have two players combined, and Ryland Griffin is kind of going to be a pretty big part, I think, of this team. You have them combined for 2 points. Mark Sears didn't play, and you lose by 4 to a you know, I think a pretty good TCU team. Like, it's, you know, it's nothing to really be worried about, the fact that Alabama lost. I mean, it's like a, well, first off, it's a scrimmage. Like, who cares? But you know, it's just, you know, Alabama, you're not going to get that from those two players all that often. So,
and last year they had another one of these secret scrimmages with TCU. That time it was in Texas, and it wasn't even close. It was a blowout loss for Alabama. And then you see they got in the season, ended up getting ranked number one for a while. They got the number one seed going into the NCAA tournament, and then they had, you know, obviously players who were drafted in the first round, one being number 2 overall. So we don't know if the team is going to be as good, but loss in scrimmage, 4 points, like you were saying, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and yeah, it is kind of interesting. Walter is, I have found a box score on Twitter. He was 7-12 from 3. There was only one other guy that made a 3-pointer. Jaron Stevenson was 1-for-2 from 3. Alabama was 8-for-25 from 3 points.
And that will change when Mark Sears is in.
That will definitely change when Mark Sears is in. And you probably, you know, won't get that shooting level again, you know, for a little bit at least. So
watch this space, though. Could be an interesting development as we, because you said only one player knocking down, or sorry, two players knocking down any threes.
There was only one 3 outside of Sam Walters.
Mark Sears is going to help there, but might be something to watch as the season.
And then, you know, the Grant Nelson, you know, almost getting a double double in, you know, his first like scrimmage. If he can be doing that consistently, that's going to be huge
for sure. Yeah. So let's touch on some other stuff. What else do we want to touch on?
Well, I will give the update on Alabama soccer. They are currently playing Mississippi State. They are down 2-0. They only have one more regular season game. It's on the road against Missouri. Then they have the SEC tournament, which will be down in Pensacola. Right now, the committee for soccer, who's going to be making the selections and stuff for them, that one will be, you know, after the SEC tournament, they're going to pick whoever makes it. Right now they have Alabama as the 12 seed. So if that holds, Alabama would still host a couple of postseason games. So if that happens, you know, get out there, support the team. And I will see if we have any more updates on this game. It should be wrapping up soon. There is 20 seconds left. Mississippi State still has a 2-0 lead. So this will end the Alabama unbeaten streak at home that was at 28 games.
Yeah, I'll go on to a different type of field softball. I had a couple games over the weekend. They played 2 doubleheaders. Finished 4-0. They played Jones College on Friday, and a doubleheader on Friday evening into night, and then Chipola College today at 1 p.m. was the doubleheader. Alabama was 4-0 on those, all 4 of those games. First off, Jones College on Friday, they won 9-2 the first game, and 12-1 in the second game. You know, I mean, Jaclyn Briskey started the game. She allowed and started the first game, I should say, allowed a two-run home run, but then struck out 7 of 8 in three innings. Kenley Callahan had a triple and drove in a run that way, a couple of walks. Kendall Clark was 4 for 4 in the second game with two run home runs. So the offense really coming to light in that one. And then earlier today, they in that Chipola College doubleheader, they won 9-0 in the first game, 11-1 in the second game. And they have not, they haven't allowed more than two runs in any of these fall ball games. Lauren Essman and Jaclyn Bricks combined 7 shutout innings. In game one, 6 strikeouts, just 3 hits allowed. Marley Giles was 3 for 4 with 3 RBIs in game two. And, just overall, it was a pretty dominant performance. I mean, obviously, these are teams Alabama expects to dominate kind of to end this fall ball stretch. But still just like a pretty dominant display. It's good to beat these teams, especially the way that they're doing them, you know. It's 11-1, 9-0. So, obviously the competition will get better, but still a good weekend for softball.
Yeah. So I'll give some quick golf updates because I'm like the golf guy,
the golf
in the room.
Please.
JP Cave got his first collegiate win at the Martin Fed Invite. I think Alabama sent a couple of the individual players to go play in this tournament. Congratulations to him getting his first collegiate win. And also, Nick Dunlap was a part of Team USA at the World Amateur Team Championship. I think he had I'll see exactly what he shot in the final round. Let's see. He finished in the top 5 to help the U.S. Bring home the Eisenhower Trophy for the first time since 2014, so big win for him. Couldn't watch it anywhere, but they won by 11 shots, so largest margin victory since 2016. So USA, USA,
Yep.
And I have a couple of things. So the first one I went to the swimming and diving competition on Friday.
Oh yes, you were in there.
I was in there.
#in here.
I had to make them my post. But yeah, that was the SEC opener. Men's team is ranked number 19, women number 20, and they both won against Missouri. SEC opener. The men won with a score of 180-118. The women won 212-88. And the women's program won 13 of the 16 events, men winning 12. And, completely dominating performance. It was great to be in there. I will say it was hilarious. They started playing Mr. Brightside in there. And the Missouri swimming and diving team, they have, Missouri, on the outskirts of the SEC, they still hold their Big 12 rivalries in high regard, their biggest one being Kansas, and they have a chant in there where it's an expletive towards Kansas. I thought that was hilarious how, you're in Alabama and you still had to get it out there. Anyway, also, I made a comment last show about the cross country team after they had won, and I was saying how hopefully they could start getting team championships, and cross country and track and field, they go hand in hand. I remembered right after the show, we couldn't come back on the air, but the cross country team, men's and women's, did win the SEC championship last year. Both of them did do that. Now I already apologized to a couple people I know on the team for my mistake on air, but I just wanted to make that clear that I do know some stuff about sports. That's why I'm here. And
a little bit.
But when we get to track and field, the last time that Alabama has won any team championship was indoor track and field 2018. The Alabama men won that one, and they since then it's been Florida in 2019, and every year since then, it's been Arkansas, and then Arkansas women have won indoor for a year, at least like the last 10, and then outdoor. It's been a while for Alabama and Arkansas. Both, they swept men's and women's outdoor last year as well. So hopefully, you know, Alabama keeps the success with the cross country, hopefully winning another championship. And then maybe that'll go into indoor and outdoor track and field.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully. I'll give another quick little update. Men's tennis was in the ITA Southern Regionals this past week. Which is in Auburn, and kind of the big highlight was Enzo. I'm going to probably butcher this. Aguirre won the ITA Southern Regional singles title. Philippe Planinsek and Andre Zimach were both named doubles champions. This was Monday and Tuesday. Aguirre won on Monday, and he gets to go now to the ITA National Fall Championships. Both the him and the doubles team get to go to the ITA National Fall Championships in November 1st through the 5th in San Diego, and you can't really ask much more for better. It was kind of a pretty interesting thing. Aguirre beat the number 68th ranked tennis player in the world, Peter Jovanovic from Mississippi State, in three sets. So just kind of like a pretty good week, obviously, for them, and they're not done with these ITA championships. As like I said, they'll be in California in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much going to do it. Just give a quick update as we're going off there, live on NBC, Sunday Night Football. Philadelphia Eagles up 10-3. Obviously, Tua versus Jalen. Very exciting game. Eagles finally scored in the red zone, I think. They've been struggling.
Was it a tush push?
I don't know.
It's the brotherly shove. I told you about that.
Oh, no, it was a receiving touchdown. Never mind.
Anyway,
you could also watch it on Peacock. You know, I'll give them a shout out.
Yeah,
they don't need us.
The show.
They don't need our shout out.
they need the low tide bump.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, maybe this will propel them.
We're
to
kind of a big deal, guys. Okay.
When are we getting a streaming deal?
That's a good question. Would we take it, or do we need to be one for the people?
Honestly, it might just have to be a YouTube show. You know, keep it free for the people.
The low tide on like Peacock or ESPN Plus.
You know, if we can just get some kind of sponsorship, maybe there's. FanDuel used to, sponsor a show that recently left to be on ESPN. There's Academy. They sponsor a show for some guy up in Nashville. So maybe they'll, give us some love down
there. Bass Pro Shop.
Bass Pro Shop.
We're going for anything.
Yeah, honestly.
Staples.
I mean, to be honest, like if there's like a Jim's Tire Shop in Alabaster, we'll take it.
Look, we need Tuscaloosa business legend Taco Casa to come sponsor
the biggest cactus in town.
Imagine a live show.
We're here in the Taco Casa. Come get your questions in.
I will do it. Y'all just tell me.
Come get your questions in at the Taco Casa. Oh God!
All right, we've got to cut this before it just completely goes off the rails. Anyway, it was fun. Another episode of the Low Tide Down. We'll be back next week during the bye week. I think we've got something special cooking in the lab. We're gonna have to cook for that show. No football to rely on. Yeah. Alabama football, at least. So anyway, we'll be back same time here next week on the Low Tide 90.7 The Capstone. Thank you for listening.